Blog Talk Radio.
The existentialist Jean-Paul Sartre thought that human beings live in anguish. Not because life is terrible, but rather because we're condemned to be free. We're thrown into existence, become aware of ourselves, and have to make choices. Even deciding not to choose is a choice. According to Sartre, every choice reveals what we think a human being should be. A penknife has an essence. There is something that makes it what it is. It has to have a folding blade, or it wouldn't be a penknife. Its essence pre-exists the actual penknife that someone makes from the design. But according to Sartre, there is no design for a human being. No way we have to be. No God to create a purpose for us. No human nature that fixes how we should live. In his 1945 public lecture, Existentialism is a Humanism, he declared that for human beings, existence precedes essence. That is the fundamental tenet of existentialism. I create myself through what I do, the choices I make in a world without fixed values. This makes me, me. I am what I do. What heightens the anguish, though, is that every sincere decision I take presents a picture of what I believe any human being should be like. In fashioning myself, I fashion humanity. I have to act as if everyone is watching me, and there is no escape from this.
Welcome, fellow human beings, to A Late Night Poet's Repast, an existential dinner with 25 courses. Tuck in your napkins, raise your knife and fork, and salute to these philosophies of existence. So well nutshelled in the short piece that Jean found for me, I want to thank her very much. That was an absolutely perfect introduction. Anything I found was on the order of 10 minutes or longer. We have with us tonight my wonderful co-host, Pam Ray. Pam, good evening.
Good evening, Lawrence. How's it going?
Pretty good. Did you enjoy that little set piece in the beginning there?
You know what? I really did. I really did. What I liked about it was that it made the philosophy of existentialism, reachable. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't feel like you needed a college education to understand the concept in the way that the guy explained it. So, great choice.
Yeah, actually, that guy, what was his name?
Fry.
Stephen Fry. You know Stephen Fry, don't you?
Oh, Stephen Fry. You know, he is one of my favorites. He really is just a smart and funny guy.
Absolutely. I loved him in the movie V.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
We have, we have 25 courses, 25 poems, some short, some long. It is a contest that I thought fit A and B perfectly because so much of what we write is usually existential in some way, that search for reality, the search for self, true meaning, what counts, what doesn't count. And so I thought, yeah, let's give it a shot. And boy, it was a pretty decent response. I enjoyed that.
Well, and you know what? It worked because really people really flocked to these prompts. I mean, you had a great turnout, quality and quantity. So, great choice.
Well, that's always encouraging, right? Okay.
Before we continue forward, I would like to let you know that Jean has joined us. So welcome, Jean.
Hi, how are you? I wanted
Good,
to take
how are you?
Yeah, so far, so good. I wanted to take the opportunity to say, as sorry as I was that Richard had to step down from the show, I'm just as pleased that Lauren was ready to step up into the show. And this is a great beginning, you know, the show here. It looks like a great turnout, and it seems like people related to it very well. So continued success. And thank you, Pam, for stepping in as co-host. God
now,
knows I can...
Gene, yeah, God bless you. Gene, let me say before you disappear into the hinterland, thank you for mentioning Richard, because I did want to say something, and it totally slipped my mind. Richard did a bang-up job for a very long time on this show. Mm-hmm. But things happened that directed his attention elsewhere. He's still with us. He wrote for the contest.
Yep.
It'll always be a pleasure to have him call in if he wants to. But his level of prompt, level of the contest that he organized was always top-notch, and he had great co-hosts. And I'm glad we're able to continue this this program
too.
For him, in his name.
Nice job.
Okay.
Anyway, I just wanted to make sure I got that out there before.
Is there anything else we need to cover before we start, or?
Nope. I'm just.
Pam, I'll assume that you'll simply interrupt when you need to if somebody calls, and if they don't,
absolutely.
Well, that's all right too.
Yep.
Alrighty.
I will let them in with bells and whistles. So.
Well, why don't you start us off there? Let us know where we're going.
Sounds good. Up first, we have God is Existentialist by Wayne Gent. And go ahead, Lauren, and give that a read, please.
Certainly. God is Existentialist. And this is off a quote that's pictured, existentialism is about being a saint without. People who believe in religion often will pray. They expect God to show them the right way. God never said to give him a call when in need. God wants us to take our own path with heed. Humans are to decide what is right for themselves. Don't expect to be told what is right by angels or elves. We have to figure out what is good or bad for us. To be existentialist, doing what is right is a must. There has to be an inner soul of being that's aware, a sensation letting each know what for them is fair. One can't blame existentialism for murder or rape. That would put humans in a category of an ape. Existentialism is the ability to do what is right without aid. Existentialism is knowing evil is living on a lower grade. God believes in existentialism. He wants us to decide. God never wanted people to live life on a free ride. Existentialism is the path to heaven's paradise. He who believes in and lives by existentialism is wise. It is up to you to determine if I am right. Good night. And poet. Well, that was Wayne at his philosophical best. Pam, do you have any initial reactions? Because he poses some interesting questions. In fact, he says in his comment to my comment, if God were existentialist, that would mean he does not exist. What do you think, Pam?
I like the clever way that Wayne approached this with a combination of philosophy and humor. And, of course, as always, a great rhyming poet. And I really like when he says, there has to be an inner soul of being that's aware, a sensation letting each know what for them is fair. One can't blame existentialism for murder or rape. That would put humans in a category of an ape. And, I mean, all the way through, there's some great lines here that make me think of this quote that I've seen, and I'm paraphrasing it slightly, but it's along the lines of, if you're only doing what's right because of your religion, then maybe you need to take a better look at yourself or your religion. And I think that's kind of, to me, part of what the message that Wayne gets across is, yeah, there could be a God, But even if there is, you can't use him as a crutch, just like you can't use any philosophy or belief system as a crutch. You really have to learn to think for yourself on an individual basis. So great write and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And a great comment, you know, because existentialism as a philosophy really has free will to determine the course of their lives, of our lives, as its as main tenet. And, you know, like you said, can't rely on a higher power religion to determine what is important, valuable, or morally right. It's up to the individual. You know, so from that point of view, God isn't an existentialist. Or as Robert Heinlein once said, we are all God, which makes all of us existentialists. I thought it was a great job, Wayne. I mean, he really knows how to stir up a conversation. His poem had a lot of comments, some of them quite in-depth, and I like that. I don't know if we should ask Jean to say anything or not, or whether she's going to be a silent bystander.
Well,
I think we'll skip this one. And if she, oh, no. That's true.
It doesn't hurt to ask.
Only if I don't answer, then it hurts. You know, I thought Wayne did a good job with this, really. I think that, you know, as individuals, you know, we do make our decisions, and we should base them on what we know is right or wrong, you know, not based on what someone else, you know, is pushing that day. But I thought he addressed it well. So that's what I'll say there. Great job, Wayne. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Judy. Great bit of commentary there. All right, Pam, in your hands.
All right. Well, up next we have No Exit Signs by Robert J. Tice. I can't retreat to everywhere or live as everyone at once or sneak outside of time to see exchanges through eternity. I dwell in possibilities, potentials, most unlikely things, the undecided dawn of night and shadows any daybreak brings. Shall I exist beyond this mind, exceed my reach, exert my will? If life's a promise I fulfill, what do I lose by standing still? While wondering, I'll sometimes find an answer that's been there before, behind a shut but unlocked door, if I can turn that handle scram. Redeeming meaning from this act of leaving room to chase a fact, as one confronting vanity, the challenge of humanity, end poem.
Yeah, well read, my dear. You know, that stanza, I can't retreat to everywhere or live as everyone at once or sneak outside of time to see exchanges through eternity. I like the way he started the piece. He boarded the second prompt and seized the helm, so to speak. The poem is really a great response to eternal questions of purpose and existence. How about you, Pam?
Yes, I absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought up the question because I think it's an important part of poetry. I've heard opposite views. Most people who know me know that I really like questions in poetry, especially philosophical poetry, because it makes the reader think along with you. But I do know there are people who really just, it's not their cup of tea, and that's fine. But, you know, I think especially for something that's philosophical, you need these questions. And I really like the no exit signs and the idea of, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in the moment, trying to live in the moment rather than constantly looking for what's beyond the exit. And,
right.
You know, I thought this had wonderful imagery. It was a really thought-provoking write on reaching beyond ourselves and to open doors of new possibilities. And I really like, shall I exist beyond this mind, exceed my reach, exert my will? If life's a promise I fulfill, what do I lose by standing still? And I think especially that last question, what do I lose by standing still, is an important one to ask ourselves. So wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, and, you know, he wrote to prompt two, which is, you'll never be able to experience everything. So please do poetical justice to your soul and simply experience yourself, which was a quote by Albert Camus. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people did Camus do that. All right. On to the next one.
All right. All right. Well, let me go ahead and grab the next one. And I got so absorbed into that one right that
no problem. We are informal here. Informal to a fault, right?
There you go. There you go. And we have up next A Work of Art After Nietzsche by Peter Solway. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please, Laurent.
All right. A Work of Art After Nietzsche. Mute philosopher, let you share his mother's lounge, comment on nothing. Fierce with walrus mustache, bottom lip drooping, sister offering beer and scones. Oh, Sartean waitress, center panel, figuring the menu out. Christian triptych by Bacon, opening night in the underground. Glass and gold frames, fashion of the individual, latest news topical, believing death final, humans fragile, ashes more so, wind blown, climate change. Camus with soccer ball, whistle of full time, conclude the game, match of automobile, last push of rock uphill, Golgotha roll, Elvis let loose. Friedrich mumbling, let ciliars rest. Way too much information in German translation. Drool of dull future coming. Sister with beer and scones. Bloated by too much history, they're modern. Evidence of eventual dissolution. Atoms of Whitman, anyone? Claimed lives to linger on. Vapors of winged Saturn, swirling Neptune. Uranus, even. Friedrich prodding, trying to make the old coot laugh. Resume the task of reflecting, acute with existentialism. Thinking lives worth thinking about. God, a bad joke. Father of suffering. Landlord of rented lodgings. Flapping his mouth without invented teeth in. Hurried sister with bedpan, your existential reporter reporting, burping, pushing off before it crumbs. Fact of anal existence, it seems, menu of heaven, horizons of angelic fulfillment, desserts to come for the blessed of appetite, sissy kid in the playground, sandwiches of delight. Friedrich in a panic, bullies, you bet. Betting to tangle around penis the neck, bedlam, courtroom next, stammering, be individual, man, with an orchestra of feeling, a gold halo surround. Socrates sharing his final question on lounge, first serious existentialist, sandals and unemployment, citizens to ask the whereabouts of this and that. Some poet is drowned in his own productions, artist of lust with hardened palate, piano player with arthritis, last stiff drink to shake and clutch. If I believe in a Better Life magazine, Nazis all dead, extinguished in flames, Adam and Eve, Jew and Palestine, dad and mom getting along, rigor mortis, French kiss of blissful release, Adolf and Gandhi, Trump and Gertrude the Duck, all the same on leveling stage of death, oblivion, one substance of compost to sweep, over and under, carpet of Islam, soaring Aladdin, swift Icarus, blended devotions, brotherhood of risen bums, Hamlet, Lady Macbeth, Shakespeare's green candle, brief as wax, but Rabbi Burns, castles of mystic ruins, pipes of heated remembrance, time all worth it, galleries of philanthropists. National Gallery of Dublin, elves and goblins hitting the wine, hosting beer and stones. If God above to narrate some spatial healing meaning, making poor Friedrich squirm. Sister with bedpan, intestine cystine, always translating such a demanding man, nodding in live agreement, this reporter of existentialism noting futile wisdom, ball to kick if able, brother to murder, love consider, horse to stable, thanking departing sister, though Friedrich looks a little better, madder than ever, with all this talk of the future, goats on a cliff, rut and ghost. End poem. And bam, didn't we agree that Dean was going to read that? No.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, she paid me to make you read it.
bonus. All right. Fair enough.
You know, money talks.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, we all know it walks. We all know it walks. Mm-hmm. Well,
yep.
After that read, I'm going to rest my voice for a few seconds while Pam, while you devote some of your vast storehouse of poetic knowledge to this poem.
Absolutely. That makes sense to me. And great read there, Lawrence. I have to say, as always, I found this wonderfully fascinating. I have to say, I've been enjoying Peter's responses lately to comments. I said to him in my written comment, and I'll expand more on that, but I said, this poem makes me think of a Hieronymus Bosch painting with imagery that overwhelms the senses in a fascinating way. Amazing thought-provoking lines and excellent right on the thought that life continues on with both labels of good and evil, no matter what philosophy we decide to follow. And I liked his response of night and day, right and wrong, the round world to orbit along, whether on par with the garden of earthly delights. Glad you got fascinated all the same, Pam. So, and then I thought about it, I just compared a poem about existentialism, which is basically that there is no existence of God. You are the existence. You create yourself, to a painter who was known for painting very religious imagery. But my comparison to him was actually the way, like, I don't know, I'm sure you have seen a Hieronymus Bosch painting, and how there's so much. It, like in that trifecta or wherever it is that he has, where it's the earthly delight, and then it's heaven, and then it's hell. And there's, each part has so much detail in it, and especially the part that represents hell. There's such an ugliness to all these little details, but at the same time, a beauty. It's fascinating. And that's how I find Peter's poetry a lot, especially this one. And I really like how he brings in the cultural elements, and he brings in that bite of humor. Old Sartean waitress, center panel, figuring the menu out, Christian triptych by Bacon, opening night in the underground. And isn't that the way it seems with philosophy? I mean, oh my goodness, I'm not even sure how many philosophies are actually existing in this world. But if we did poems, like if we did shows on individual philosophies, we'd have enough probably to cover the next 10 years. And that's only if they didn't invent any more. I really like Thinking Life's Worth Thinking About, Got a Bad Joke, Father of Suffering, Landlord of Rented Lodgings, Flapping His Mouth Without Invented Teeth In, Hurried Sister with Bedpan, Your Existential Reporter Reporting, Burping, Brushing Off Metaphoric Crumbs. You know, like if you really feel the need to lick up somebody else's crumbs, then maybe you're really just not enjoying the bread of life as much as you should be, you know, that you could be creating. So absolutely, really a brilliant, hard-hitting write and spot on for the topic. Very well done.
Well, that poem received a commentary that it deserved. I thought it was a little like James Joyce's Ulysses. The poem is filled with an abstraction of imagery, replete with layers of meaning that delight the questing mind. It's really fashioned a true existentialist work. life carved into a work of art. All right, Pam, on to the next one.
All right. Up next, we have Abstract Art of Existentialism by S. Sharp. And we have an audio for that, so here we go.
Abstract Art of Existentialism. Without hope, men like children dip hands in buckets of blood and paint, whipping hands over a canvas of time, splattering night with day or day with night, leaves nothing in between but hope. How can that be? Blue skies and blood-red skies over the different shoulders of man, turning side to side, face blotted out, hair parted cleanly down the middle. Handprints stamped in the background, clawing at the past, grasping for the future. Slap both in disbelief. Two madams from the same whorehouse, mistress and wife, wife and mistress. Dots, lines, splatters and blotches, train tracks running through endless time. Man stands on the platform at the station, waiting, waiting for God, reason, or rhyme.
Are you on mute, Lawrence?
No, no, I was sitting there thinking about the poem itself. That was something. Like dots, lines, splatters, and blotches, train tracks running through endless time, and stands at the platform at the station, waiting, waiting for God, reason, or rhyme. He doesn't make any attempts to disavow God or to deny him, simply to understand that God would be unable to save us, is unable to save us from ourselves, which I find very true. We often act counterproductively against our own best interests, which always amazes me. And therefore, I thought it was an excellent response to the Dopp quote, which was built primarily from the large quote at the top. How about you, Pam? What do you got to say?
Yeah, I really liked this one and how he compares the whole idea of existentialism to an abstract work of art, you know, and to life in general, and trying to find that reason within the abstract imagery of life. I really like dots, lines, splatters, and blotches, train tracks running through endless time. It made me think of the whole idea of as if the world had been created, life had been created like a Jackson Pollock painting. And I thought that was really cool. And handprints stamped in the background, clawing at the past, grasping for the future, slap both in disbelief, two madams from the same whorehouse, mistress and wife, wife and mistress. You know, two sides of the same coin. You know, the whole idea of our obsession with time. And I thought really just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Great comment. I like that. Hey, by the way, what is a burning question on the mind of every dyslexic existentialist? Is there a dog?
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. Got a little bit of levity, right? Jane, if you don't get that, you just let us know, huh? All right. Let's proceed.
All right. Well, up next we have Wandering Stream by Joe Braz. And Jean, please give that a read for us.
Sure.
It's short.
That's fine. Who's it by? Where's it at? Wait a minute.
Joe Braz.
Okay. I got to find the room so I can find the link. Come on now. Wandering Stream. Sure. Wandering Stream by Joe Braz. For these thoughts to make sense, one must first see there is will in all to make sense. That basic thoughts that were held be let go, at least abandoned. No more weight given to past taken or chosen can have an impact or influence those who choose not to choose. This is the wandering stream. It does not choose its path. It does not oppose its peregrination. Human philosophy and atheism is the same as and human meander through life, no more seeking creator than an earthworm searches through dirt. It passed through us and deposits as we go, all of us. It is in store for kings, harlots, mathematicians, musicians, poets, and inescapable death. How or when each of us arrive does not matter, and we are piled one by one on the same fire. Suicide is a destination, is a death example, and of a very bland end for man, seeking escape from a thought that there is nothing on a nothing planet. Chaos or absurdity in its basic letdown, word salad, stream of thought, self-talk, gibberish, self-praise, inner workings, secret life, crackpot, crazy, sociopath, psychotic, yes, and basic, and home.
Hey, nice read, Jude. We appreciate that. I'm telling you right now. These lines, is in store for kings, harlots, mathematicians, musicians, poets, the inescapable death. How or when each of us arrives does not matter. And we are piled one by one on the same fire. You know, to experience yourself fully, the path can be torturous, uncountable paths. And they all lead the same fire, as the poet says. And only one is yours. It's so true to the prompt. It's a discerning, intelligent work that I really appreciated. And you, Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to say, I really appreciated this one, too. First of all, Gene, you did a great read on this. I liked the imagery and metaphors in this, and the title Wandering Stream, with the whole idea, the philosophy that you never step in the same stream twice, and the idea that he brings in the word salad, stream of thought, self-talk, gibberish, self-praise, inner work, and secret life, crackpot, crazy, sociopath, psychotic, yes, and basic. Like, it really seems like oftentimes there's this fine line between genius and insanity. This has wonderful thought-provoking lines. It's an excellent write on the reminder that no matter how we do or don't choose our paths, we are all heading towards death. And I like that. Suicide as a destination is the death example of a very bland end for man, seeking escape from a thought that there is nothing on a nothing planet, chaos or absurdity in its basic letdown. The whole idea of just wanting to escape life because you think there's got to be something better. And perhaps, I think it's a very eye-opening write with its use of directness in the idea that, you know what, this is what you get and you've got to learn to accept it. But wonderful lines and very well done. And before you continue on, Lawrence, I would like to mention that Nika has joined us. So welcome, Nika. Glad you could be here.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hello, Nika. What a pleasure.
Pleasure to hear you, too.
Okay. No, it's great to have your voice. I just got to... There's a little. This Pam is going to appreciate this because, you know, her cow persona is very successful. What did the existentialist cow say? Amu. you know, Albert Camus. Okay. Right. Yeah. You gotta try.
No.
All right. I don't know if you wanted to, can you stay with us any length of time, or do you want to read and run?
Oh, no, I plan to be here and hang out with you guys. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much. All right, Pam, it is back.
Forget my rusty comments, that's all.
No, you never said a rusty thing in your life.
Well, there you go. All right, so up next we have You Are Free and That Is Why You Are Lost by John Nakapola. And go ahead, please, Mika, and give that a read.
Okay. You are free, and that is why you are lost. And right before death, you discover that all along, the only answer was that only by being lost could you find the freedom to understand this. End poem.
Okay, now, first of all, well read. Secondly, for such a short poem, this generated some strong commentary, because the lines, only by being lost can you find the freedom to understand where you are. I'm trying to remember which prompt that was, and I can't pick it up real quick, but freedom, you know, it offers no maps, there's no road map, there's no paternal guide to take you by the hand. And to refer to the poem specifically, only as the last train rolls into Death Station does being lost make sense. Because freedom, it brings comprehension. You know, it's that moment just before death when everything seems to make sense and you understand what's going on. And somehow you find yourself at that point, despite being lost, as you begin to understand, you know, what's going on. So, you know, that's about as powerful as a philosophical brain is going to get. Pam, how about you? What's your comments?
Absolutely. You know what? John really has a talent for brevity, especially the way he makes the title part of the poem's message. And I really like the impact that this has. It's a wonderful philosophical brevity on the importance of becoming lost to ourselves in order to find true freedom. And it's difficult to separate one part from the other, so I have to say I do honestly like it all the way through. But I especially like, and right before death, you discover that all along, you know, and I can stop right there because I feel like for so many people, there's no matter what it is that you suddenly realize, it's often realized at the end of life. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
That was a great comment, and thank you. And the actual plot was by Kafka, you are free, that is why you are lost. Yeah, you know, it's very easy to be guided, you know, take it by the hand, show you where to go. But boy, you have to be the lead man, the point man, and all of a sudden, so where am I? Mika, please. Great read, by the way.
Thank you. I also agree with Pam. I really like how John uses the first, or the title of his poem as the first line. And I think in this poem, it takes on an even cooler dimension when you appreciate how circular it is, almost like an Ouroboros.
Yes.
Or I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Arrival, the language of the aliens that exist outside of time is circular like that. It's because he took the prompt pretty much word for word, but then in the end, only by being lost could you find the freedom to understand this, and he turns it on its head. And it feeds back and back into itself in a circle. And I think that not only speaks well to the prompt, but also touches at the heart of the thinking of existentialists. And I don't know, I found it really inspiring. It actually gave me goosebumps the first time I read it. It's a really, really good write.
Hey, great comment, Mika. Thank you so much. All right, Pam, let's press on.
All right. Well, up next we have Detours and Destiny by Creatistically Inclined. And it goes like this. Awaken, wander, windy ways, walk through sunshine, walk through haze. Who untold the truth to us, we little waifs, lost in the fray. Choose paths because the writings say, naive and blind to unlocked gates. Instead we jump, take leaps of fate, be it now or be it then, preordained, regardless sin. Shall we do right or we do wrong, though finale bleats the same last song, end poem.
Thank you, Pam. Mika, please, comment.
Yeah, this is a cool write. I like that the beginning, it starts with one word in each line, and there's this sort of like awakening just from awaken being a word on its own in the beginning that mirrors what they're talking about in this poem. And I like the who untold the truth to us, like kind of turning the phrase on its head there, who untold the truth to us, because like the way that we perceive things is so colored by what we are told things are. And when you appreciate them for what they are without preconceived biases, without preconceived notions about them, whether it's something philosophical or even something physical, like if you guys have ever watched the video, What is a Chair? These basic truths fall apart and untell themselves. And it is all our own construction onto a fabric of reality that really is surreal. So, yeah, I liked that.
Great comment. And Pam, please.
Yeah, I really like what Mika had to say about preconceived notions and, you know, the whole idea of opening one's mind. I like the rhyme and flow in this, the short, impactful lines. It just had really great imagery, and it was an excellent, well, I don't even know if it's technically a brevity, but, it kind of had that brevity feel to it. On going through life on various paths, only to come to the same conclusion. And I like how it says, to us, we little waves lost in the fray, choose paths because the writings say, naive and blind, to unlocked gates, instead we jump, take leaps of fate. You know, it's like, you don't necessarily have to take those leaps. You don't have to take those jumps because there is that opportunity to walk through these gates of knowledge that have been unlocked for you. So I think this was a wonderful take on the chosen prompt and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I think we are ready to move on.
All right. Well, up next we have Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Silken Thread by Liquid Mind Forever. And Lauren, go ahead, please, and give that a read.
All right. This is based on prompt number 6. I felt myself in a solitude so frightful that I contemplated suicide. What helped me back was the idea that no one, absolutely no one, would be moved by my death, that I would be even more alone in death than in life. I lie drenched in sweat beneath a canopy of pouty stars. I lie, petrified. Miles away, I can hear the tribal drum beating uncensored remorse, while a quartet of native crickets chirp an SOS, and one formidable praying mantis forces his way with my adversarial reverie, and I, fevered on the edge of brokenness. Pitch-black tar of inferiority paved the grave of my funerary burial. and knowingly a spot for solace among the simulation of bravery, bestowing corn and tobacco unto whatever gods of mediocrity watched me with great amusement. Alone, but ensconced through the eons of wisdom, I sought a vision, an answer, a reason for going on one more moment without you. Oblivion fell and crumbled any hope of future happiness I pretentiously held against the rest, testing the futility of prehensile tales of yesterday, hitting the spittoon of finite infinity. Some part and parcel of hope clung to me, like a waterlogged piece of drifting detritus. Nothing could hide, and nothing could divide us. Out loud, I defied the fires of hell, smell of lachrymose obscurity, cured for me a prenuptial eternity. I came seeking for some sign, some cipher, some eking of credibility, and in my blind eagerness, I knew culpability. Drained, yet full of wishful absurdity, I listened to immeasurable silence. The violence of indomitable hope wrapped its sterile paws in the jaws of endless flaws gnawed. There, in the midst of utter isolation, realization chewed at the gut of a resolute will. And I knew the swill, and I knew the chill of falling into the void of nothingness without change. End quote. Woo! What great piece that was. Pam, please, can you start us off?
Absolutely. First of all, great read there, Laurent. As always, Liquid Mind Forever has thought-provoking lines, brilliant imagery and metaphors. It really was a powerful write on a leap of faith and love taken, only to find oneself falling into an abyss. Beautifully written vignette. I always enjoy and appreciate her use of inner and end rhyme. I'm particularly fond of, as far as imagery goes, the second part with pitch black tar of inferiority paved the grave of my funerary burial, and knowingly I sought for solace among the simulation of bravery, bestowing corn and tobacco onto whatever gods of mediocrity watched me with great amusement. Alone but ensconced with eons of wisdom for going on one more moment without you. And I like how those lines speak on the idea of learning to think for yourself, you know, learning to go beyond the mundane, beyond the mediocre, and, you know, beyond what you have been taught by other people or by traditions. Really an amazing write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam. It was an excellent comment. And Mika, would you like to go next?
Sure. That was an excellent comment, Pam. I really like Liquid Mind Forever's writing. And I think in this piece, I'm really overtaken by the sense of that pull and tug of understanding the meaninglessness of reality, of all the things that we hold pretentiously against our breasts, like she puts about happiness, and yet that hope actually won't leave us alone. That nagging part and parcel of hope, clinging to us like waterlogged piece of drifting detritus. And I really like that throughout the poem, in every separated part, there is that understanding of meaninglessness and the call of the void, the call of nihilism. And yet, in every stanza there, again, comes the voice of hope niggling at the back of your ear saying, but still there's hope, but still there's hope. And I have a feeling that this submergence into the void of nothingness without a parachute won't get rid of that voice either, because that's
being human. Yeah, I liked it.
Outstanding commentary. When she said, there in the midst of utter isolation, realization chewed at the gut of the resolute will, and I knew the swill and I knew the chill of falling into the void of nothingness without parachute. There have been several poems, I think, written tonight with the same prompt as Deborah did. I think within the poem, what was discovered was what preceded these lines. I came seeking for some sign, some cipher, some eking of credibility, and in my blind eagerness, I knew culpability. She was to blame, and oblivion in this case was too well realized, almost insupportable to what little ego we have remains. I thought it was a really a profound write, and certainly a pleasure to read Deborah's work. Thank you, Deborah. And if you'll continue, Pam.
All right. Well, up next we have Invincible Summer by Richard Wiseman. And Richard was nice enough to supply us with an audio, so here we go.
Invincible Summer by Richard Wiseman. I wailed, a mewling infant lost in a winter. One thumbprint from nuclear apocalypse, raining terror of Cold War carpet bombings, deviled and snowblinded by escapist coca monsters. All arrows boomeranged, wounding me to poetry. Dark was the dawn there, lost midst the spiraling fount of self-hate, till I bathed in purifying oceans of love. And was redeemed by light transcendent, though I'm no prophet, preacher, or god machine, still I found invincible calm. So I couch back and breathe deep old chanting of that ineffable call. Oh. End of poem.
We should all chant Om Mani Padme Hum, because it leads to that prompt number one, which is a little too long to read, but in essence, in his letter, begins to describe the things that he had found within himself, and those included invincible love, smile in the midst of chaos, calm in the midst of winter, a summer, and all of that makes him happy. And, you know, it's, so I bathed in purifying oceans of love and was redeemed by light transcendent. Well, I'm no prophet, preacher, or God machine. It really is that moment when clarity offers its own reward, a transcendent calm that allows deeper thought in the land of home. How well you pushed back, Richard, with what you found within yourself. I thought it was a terrific light. And Pam, please.
Yeah, this is great. Wonderful choice for the show. I really love the imagery and metaphors in this. The meditation at the end, and really was a great write on finding the complete of ourselves within the part. And I really like where it says, all arrows boomeranged, wounded me to poetry. Dark was the dawn there, lost midst the spiraling font of self-hate. You know, sometimes it takes coming to the lowest point in our life to find where we're supposed to be. And for many of us that is poetry. Poetry is that transcendent moment. It is that moment, as you were saying, Lauren, that aha moment. So just an amazing write and very well done. Are you on mute, Laurent? Or are you in awe of my comments?
You bet I was. You bet. No, hey, someone has to continue the tradition. You know, Gene can't always be the one that goes on mute. I'm there to help her out.
That's why you got to do it.
Yeah. That was a terrific comment. Thank you. And Mika, please.
Oh, yeah. I was drawn to that same part, Q-Pam, of the wounding meat of poetry and how really the catharsis of poetry does help transform our understanding. And also, I think just delving into the words of these thinkers does that. And I love to read something that starts so dark. I love the phrase, one thumbprint from nuclear apocalypse. What a cool phrase. Turning into something so full of self-worth and self-love at the end. Because a lot of times I think, just as we were talking about with Liquid Mind Forever's poem, there's a pull of nihilism when we think about these things. And this is the opposite side of the coin to that. So, yeah, it was really lovely.
Thank you very much, Mika. This will be the last little amusement that I offer for the evening. So you have to listen hard. It's called Coffee Philosophy. The French existentialist Jean-Paul Sartre was sitting in a cafe when a waitress approached him. "Can I get you something to drink, Monsieur Sartre?" Sartre replied, "Yes. I'd like a cup of coffee with sugar, with no cream." Nodding agreement, the waitress walked off to fill the order, and Sartre returned to him. A few minutes later, however, the waitress returned and said, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Sartre, we are all out of the cream. How about with no milk?" At any rate, I am back.
All right.
You know what the problem is? We're all on mute at the end of your joke. So then there's an awkward pause where you think no one's laughing, even though we have to unmute so you could hear us giggle.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. But that's the end of it.
There you go.
Back to
All right. Well, up next we have Willy Wagtail by Neutron Bomb. And Mika, would you please give that a read for us?
Oh, yeah, I'd be honored to. Okay, Willy Wagtail. Lead light paints flicker with rose gold hues, and the bustle of children keep chaos with the light. Beaming at the paintbrush in their hands, they carve meaning out of the Willy Wagtail I chortled with today. We evolve to proffer meaning in the unknown to make sense of our little patch of glory. Flocked in golden sunlight in the middle of a warm August, weary of the flames to come, the floods that turn homes into riverboats, and the sinkholes that try to swallow us in the belly of the serpentine rainbow. Across the great pond, lightning strikes twice through manual blinds against the cityscape that glares back with 1980s greed. Don't you worry, child. That oak tree emulates your roots, binding with time. Let the universe crawl into your womb and give birth to a seed of hope. Grow towards the light, tangled with lichen crevices, in leaf bistros, watching centipedes strike with venomous forcipules and swallow prey. We look for rain in the reason and snow in the flight of time, but sometimes the sun dissipates behind flaucous formations against the magenta-sheared cliffs for a roll of the dice. Hold space for the cicadas that penetrate your ears. The sutures are a trek through the dark alleyways and UV blue hallways you've called home. Rhyme and roll a dime. Hold your brethren close. Live through the gut-wrenching pain. Hug a sea of sunflowers that hang to the sun's hole like sea urchins. End poem.
That was fun. Thank you so much, Mike. The prompt, there is no sun without shadow, and it's essential to know the night. All the way through this poem, he offers us metaphors and contrasts between the dark and the light that we all have to try and survive. When he says, flocked in golden sunlight in the middle of a warm August, weary of the flames to come, the floods that turn homes into riverboats, and the sinkholes that try to swallow us in the belly of the serpentine rainbow. Brighter the light, darker the shadow it casts. Paraphrase the Welsh singer Wren Gill, from the sinkholes that try to swallow us to the oak tree emulating our roots. by this contrast of light and dark, and their place in life was superbly drawn. It was very good. And Pam believes.
Yeah, this is beautifully written. It's interesting to me. It's fascinating how Willy Wagtail seems like a character in a children's novel, or the name of a puppy, which is almost a juxtaposition to the thought put within this poem. Although, you know, there is a tone of innocence to this, but there's also a tone of understanding and trying to get the next generation to understand that life has a dark side. And I really like how this is, it's a teaching poem. It's talking to either like a literal child or an inner child. And the whole idea of finding purpose in the simple moments and the importance of the dark to see the light. I really like where she goes, across the great pond, lightning strikes twice through manual blinds against the seascape that glares back with 1980s greed. Don't you worry, child, that oak tree emulates your roots, binding with time. Let the universe crawl into your womb and give birth to a seed of hope. I like how that speaks on the whole idea of our faith, you know, should be in ourselves. Our hope should be in not only ourselves, but in what we can potentially teach the next generation and the generation after that. And so wonderful, wonderful, right, all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Excellent comment. And Mika?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go on the same track as you, Pam, with the teaching different generations. I think it's so incredible in the beginning. You feel almost a joy with her when she talks about the children keeping chaos with the light painting and trying to make meaning out of something silly. Willy Wagtail, I chortled with today. And the wisdom, and we evolve to proffer meaning in the unknown to make sense. And even children have that drive to make sense out of chaos. And she then goes into a few stanzas of, I think, almost warning of the pain to come, but warning that comes threaded with the promise that light will return, that there is a reason to go through the pain that comes in life to everyone. And that's really beautiful to me. She might kill me for this comparison, but it reminds me of the song I Hope You Dance, because she's looking at these children who have not experienced the things that she's describing in these painful stanzas, and urging them in her heart to remember that at the end of it, you hold your brethren close, you live through the gut-pinching pain, and you hug the sea of sunflowers that hangs to the sun's hole like sea urchins. And you take those moments of beauty with the sutures that are a trek through the dark alleyways of home. Excellent poem.
And an excellent poem. Bravo. All right, Pam, lead us on.
All right. Up next, we have Searching the Void by Arcana Amore. And Arcana was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So let me mosey on over there, and here we go.
That's got to be turned way up.
Shadows rise from twilight skies as darkness stares through empty eyes. Smoldering sight ignites embers of light like an oasis of stars in the desert of night. somewhere inside, where conscience hides, in shades of duality, the spirit resides. Behind a veil, where ghost ships sail, over stormy seas, on tenebrous tides. Gods deceive, without presence to perceive, such deities dwell, where doubts believe, calling aloud, beneath faith's shroud, from winsome words, on a drifting cloud, dancing to melodies of rhythmic chants, echoed inside remedies of ritual rants, keeping time to the temporal sway, while melting moments ebb away. Where angels hide, while spectres glide, in haunted hearts as dreams collide, traveling afar through empty lands, searching the void for heavenly hands. Fate decrees on bended knees to surf the waves of stormy seas, hearing the voice that speaks within, silently smiling a salubrious grin. All that there is that which exists, while ghostly gods float in their mists, swimming the night like a circling shark. To understand light is to know the dark.
That was bloody marvelous. Mika, could you start us off, please?
Oh, yeah. I would say that was a trip. Like a guided meditation on acid, maybe. I really liked his form. I noticed you put that in your comment, but it is incredible to me when people can rhyme so effortlessly and so beautifully. And I have to go right to the last stanza. Swimming the night like a circling shark, to understand light is to know the dark. It's wonderful how the poem wraps up all of its light and dark duality in the last two lines. Just immaculate.
I absolutely agree with you. And Pam, please.
I like that. I like that comment. And yeah, I have to agree that Arcana has one of those voices that does make you feel like you're on that guided acid trip. So very cool. Yeah, this has wonderful rhyme and flow. I mean, spot on. Great imagery. I really like how this does speak on looking at the voids within our lives, looking at, you know, either what's missing or the darkness that kind of tends to overwhelm, and allowing that, those moments, to be the opportunity to let our inner light shine brighter. And I really like where it says, dancing to melodies of rhythmic chants, echoed inside remedies of ritual rants, keeping time to the tempered sway while melting moments ebb away. And, you know, I don't know, I feel like that, you know, the whole idea of, you know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but wasting time on ritual when really what you could be doing is appreciating the moments that you do have. And I also like the way that he wrapped this up with swimming the night like a circling shark, to understand light is to know the dark. You have to know one in order to know the other. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Outstanding comment by Pam and Mika. I won't go over the same ground. I will mention, though, that this piece recognizes the essential tenet of existentialism, that even if a God exists, he should play no part in what we do. Yet he writes, yet Arcana writes, gods deceive with our presence to perceive, since deities dwell where doubts believe, calling aloud beneath faith's shroud from winsome words on a drifting cloud. And I agree with Mika on that last stanza. The understand light is another dark and very powerful. And I relish the form and the effortless rhyme that tells an appropriate tale of the light and the dark. Duality we may not separate, but need to understand in our everlasting search for reason. Arcana, this is a Ravura work, I'd say. And Pam, lead us forward.
All right. Well, up next we have Clouded Existence by A.R. Mundell. And it goes like this. A blue whale dances in the clouds beneath my mind as my boat looms ever nearer to the horizon I'll never find. Am I more the whale or ship, the clouds or their vast sea, as I linger here not knowing in this place that's made of me? End poem.
Nice read. And Amy, as usual, hits the target square on. Mika, could you start us off, please?
Yeah, this is so cool. I told her that I really love the surreal imagery with the whale and the boat. But it's cool. The end question is, what am I, the whale or the ship, the clouds or the vast sea? Like, there's so many parts to not only ourselves, if we delve into like our internal experience, but even the way that we experience the external is so colored by everything that's inside. So it's like distinguishing where I end and something else begins is an effort in basically constructing and creating that separation. And I think that's what they speak to in this poem. It's really, really well done.
I do agree. And, you know, I'll add to what you just said that I have nothing but admiration for the skill it takes to so concisely, yet richly write successfully the three prompts in this place that's made of me. Wow. So good. Pam, could you give us your comment, please?
Absolutely, yes. This is a wonderful philosophical brevity. The rhyme is spot on. I love that style that she does where she has the end of one stanza, it'll rhyme with the end of the next stanza. And I, too, really liked the surreal imagery of the whale and the boat. And I like how this is about trying to find your purpose and place within life, and that it does it with a paint stroke that has very much a Lewis Carroll vibe to it. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Now, where does that little black eight ball say our future is going to next?
Well, the eight ball says that we are heading to your poem, Lawrence. So as soon as you see it, give it a read.
Uh-oh. Right? This is called Always Facing the Sun Alone. It was written to a number of the different prompts, specifically echoing parts of 1, 2, 3, and 9. Always facing the sun alone, breathing by reflex, autonomy of the lungs, clouds of surrealistic pillows on which to lay my head. Where do the dreams go? Flitting in sequences of videotape, spooling out on the floor. I become Camus, digging holes in my existence and discovering the steel and resolve, smile without laughter, and sorrow in silence. Stare into the dazzle of an Aquarian sky. Anticipate a commensurate shadow. learning brighter brings darker. Know the night as you would the light. Lay down arms against yourself. It's a big war, a long war. The boogie between bullets is an estrangement of self. Ego dances on the head of a bayonet. Your world is small. Tend to the garden and reap what you love. Paint who you are with care. Carve your nobility slowly, carefully. Inject a temporal sustain into the heartwood of your life. Existence needs rules for a game with only one answer, often lost in a solitary tsunami of emotional wild winds, revealing the see-through creature you are. Face the current of your creation. Avoid the deadly flow of ambivalence. Mind poison slays you at the feet of the dark gods within you. Care the universe. We are human beings in ascent, poised somewhere between the angels and the devil. Each of us, an ape arising on a flaming pillar of dark light, is facing the sun.
Great read and write there, Laurent, and oh my goodness, what a brilliant write. And Nika, your thoughts?
Oh man, I'm still getting my bearings. This poem is sick, like in the way that punk rock or prompts that you chose are sick. It's especially the ending. So freaking, just pulled me in and made me feel extremely excited. And that's what I love about being on these shows, because I didn't see your poem in the contest, and I would have missed it, and I really am glad that I didn't. I mean, there was a lot of imagery to pull out of this and really savor the tape spilling out on the floor of the dreams. But the philosophy that's threaded through it is just really sustaining to read. I think you had in there temporal sustain, and I think that this kind of write is a temporal sustain for me. I guess my favorite part, if I had to pick one, is avoid the deadly flow of ambivalence, a mind poison which lays you at the feet of the dark gods within you, because it gives rise to the thought of the fact that the gods are within ourselves, and yet we strive for one over the other. And when we stop striving, when we become ambivalent, the dark gods within us win.
Mm-hmm.
Loved
it. No, I'm glad you grabbed that a little bit. That was very good. Thank you, my dear.
I like that. I like that. Great thoughts shared. And I have to say that not only is it great to hear, you know, an intelligent comment, but the fact that within your comment you had that emotional response of that like just trying to grasp in the moment that the emotional impact of the poem on you, and I thought that was really cool. But yeah, this is an amazing write, Laurent. I mean, spot on, obviously, for the topic. I really like the nod to Camus. I became Camus, digging holes in my existence, discovering the steel and resolve to smile without laughter and sorrow and silence, stare into the dazzling Aquarian sky, anticipate a commensurate shadow, learning brighter brings darker, know the night as you would the light. And I like how this is all about searching. It's all about finding answers. It's finding out the works of art that best represent ourselves and bring meaning into our own existence. And I like how at the end, each of us with an ape arising on a flaming pillar of dark light makes me think of the movie Planet of the Apes and the whole idea of what does the future hold? And you know, will we always be at the top of the pecking order? I also all the way through, amazing imagery and metaphors. Existence needs rules for a game with only one real answer, often lost in a solitary tsunami of emotional wild winds. And it is oftentimes I mean, emotions are a beautiful thing, but sometimes they can be an overwhelming part of being human, which, you know, creates this barrier that doesn't allow us to see with the clarity that we could be seeing. You know, and amazing, right, and very well done. And was there anything that you wanted to say about your poem?
I'm glad I redid the end a bit. It was weak, and I knew it was weak. I threw the thing up there, and then I said no, and spent some time with it. It turned out better than I thought, and I thank you guys for the amazing comments.
Can I say one more thing
yeah.
now that I've chewed on it a bit about the ending? Sorry. Each of us in April Rising on a flaming pillar of dark light is very, very strong. I don't know what the ending originally was, but what is crazy about it is that when you imagine an ape being catapulted into the sun, you imagine its confusion, its lack of understanding, and that's where I think the emotion really arises in the ending that you've created here, because we consider ourselves I think extremely intelligent and extremely capable of grappling with these philosophies and these very theoretical things, but to be conscious of our consciousness is extremely difficult, and it almost like we as a species were unprepared for that dark light arising within us. So anyway, I don't know. I still really, really am drawn to that.
I'm so happy that you caught that. I didn't want to say anything, but to me, the sun is the bright light of the future, which, as you just mentioned, can be sometimes totally incomprehensible. What is happening to me, you know? And yet we are those apes, astonished by every new thing that we find. So that was great that you picked up on that.
Wonderful, right, Laura?
Man, please. Thank you. Man. Too much time spent on this. We got plenty of good stuff to get into.
Oh, absolutely. And up next, Mika, we have your right. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, thank you. I wrote this with James Hatfield, who's also an LNP, and I wish I could have got him to come on and read it with me, but thank you, James, for writing with me. I was not feeling super capable of writing, and I appreciate that he kind of pushed me into it. So this is called Sartre's Ghost. Silky smooth, I drink in the morose midnight murk of being. Harsh as hell, the gleaming truth of it all sets me afire. Sunlight saunters like a fool over my inflamed skin, casting shadows far more easy to fall in. And of that oil slick, I beg a black baptism. I hug the confusion that keeps me from the clarity of the things I know. I know the darkest depths of show, where the light peeps in. Pressed to a keyhole between heterochromatic mirrors, under the burning eye of a buried god, I reflect in every direction, listening with my open mouths, shoveling his tomb's black dirt in my ears. Division between the radiant pain of sentience and the loving pleasure in the anesthesia of unconscious. End poem.
Well, I know clapping in the radio is not a good thing, but I've got to tell you, the emotional response that you felt a little bit ago, I felt myself, but I don't want to take up all the time. Let's start with fan foods.
Oh, first of all, great read there, Mika. And an amazing write, and a wonderful collaboration that had a nice smooth flow to it between you and James. It really is difficult to pick out a favorite part, but what I really like is how brilliant the imagery and metaphors are and how the lines flow seamlessly one into the next. And I really thought this was a powerful write on knowing the light that comes from darkness and the depth of the subconscious mind. It really speaks on the whole idea of opening the mind in almost a meditative state. Great choices of lines with Casting shadows far more easy to fall in, and of that oil slick I beg a black baptism, pressed to a keyhole between heterochromatic mirrors under the burning eye of a buried god. I reflect in every direction, listening with my open mouth, shoveling his tomb's black dirt in my ears. In order to know our own life, we truly have to experience the death of an idea. So wonderful writing, both of you, and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam.
All right, the emotional responses. You know, sometimes it's not what the poet said, although it's very meaningful. It's the way he said it, or in this case, the way you and or James said it. The skill was such, you just have to stop and kind of shake your head a little bit, and you smile and you reread and you go, wow, that's outstanding. Silky smooth, I drink in the morose midnight murk of being. Harsh as hell, the gleaming truth of it all sets me afire. It starts with silky smooth. It's an implication of smooth water, smooth glass, smooth fabric, unbroken, its sheen. And then you follow that. I drink in the morose midnight murk of being, which is not only outstanding alliteration, but it's just wonderful phrasing. And so we have smooth moving into midnight murk or darkness, and immediately you give us a hell, which is a combination of light and dark. But then the word gleaming is light, and a fire is bright. Just the way the whole thing was constructed, spot on. Sunlight saunters like a fool over my inflamed skin, casting shadows far more easily to fall in. And on that oil slick, I beg a black baptism. That, I beg a black baptism. That hit me. I just looked at it. Really, the first two stanzas left me mouth agape with pleasure, especially the second. And this almost seems to be a call and response to this excellent work. Observations on duality, light and dark. You know, not to make a play on words, but that last stanza is coherence at its best. Thank you guys so much for outstanding work.
Thank you so much.
And do you want to say anything about it? Do you want to say anything about it? Or how do you say it?
I just appreciate both your guys' read of it. And, I think the duality was really cool. It came into every piece so far on the show. In our case, I feel like you said it in your poem way better than I could, but the pain that comes with the light of knowledge is really, really important to me in what I was trying to portray. And I love how you did it, and I'm really glad that you appreciated what I did in this one, too.
Oh, no, I'm telling you, when you get an emotional response to a poem, there's got to be a reason why. And most of the time, it's effing excellent. And there's a truth in there somewhere. There's a lot of truth in there. All right, Pam, you're letting me talk far too long. Please exercise some control.
There you go. All right. Well, up next we have If the Shoe Fits by Eric Svensson, and we have an audio for that, so here we go.
If the shoe fits, Prada or Nada, flip-flops, Louis Vuitton or $1 store shuffles, if the shoe fits, Mohican moccasins strut dandy, chasing bareback through serrated pampas grass, each blade a knife edge point of view. Now that gets my gizmo going. Kiss, mate, kiss myself, I do. Arcadian athlete, I discobolus. Finally, folks, the greatest show on earth, ringmaster, a ringmaster, teach us the true song. Oops, oops, deathly silence preamble, we seat edge dangles. Angst wedges get us gizmo gasp for breath. No ringmaster presents itself. Bat, blink, wink, think, think. Deepest, deep blue breath you'll ever take arrives. The kingdom of heaven is within, not without. The burning bush you stand before is your God's spark. I am that I am. You are that you are. Ring masterless, we can finally embrace our inner equity. Blackout usurped by Big Bang moment kickstart. For eons we've been traveling Wilbury musicians. Why not enjoy the train ride and make music? Of course, interspersed with rest periods, thrift lift of Hades, vacation periods. Well rested, we return refreshed, refurbished. Between Doris Day, Case Sarah Sarah, and Robin's Batman Joker, find your shoe. Best one that will accommodate vast hot space expansion. As all cerebral cognitive functions soon usurped by AI sleuths. Burning bush heart space, our only saving grace. Outwit, outplay, and outlive centuries of engineered enslavement. End poem.
Now that gets my gizmo going. Who doesn't enjoy hearing Eric Reed? This is a unique voice and inflection directed away from religion. Eric's emphasis is on that spark within us that lights the way. Deepest blue breath you ever take arrives. The kingdom of heaven is within, not without. The burning bush you stand before is your God's spark. I am that I am. You are that you are. Ring masterless, we can finally embrace inner equity. The heart is truly the engine that offers an expansion of consciousness that guides us forward. Burning bush, heart space, our only saving grace. Metaphors are excellent, vivid in their use for guidance and understanding of the human animal. That is a powerful light. Thank you for giving us the pleasure. And Pam, please.
Oh, this is amazing. Such a clever right. I even, I like the title with the whole idea and the message of finding the shoe that fits you, finding what represents you. And like you, Lawrence, I really like the idea of the focusing on the inner light, that the idea that the burning bush isn't something from an outside source, but rather your inner light, your inner source. I really like where it says, I am that I am, you are that you are. Ring masterless, we can find, embrace our inner equity. Blackout usurped by Big Bang moment kickstart for eons. We've been traveling Wilbury musicians. Why not enjoy the train ride and make music? I mean, those are just the kind of lines that really make you smile. When he brings in the traveling Wilburys and the train ride of life, and just the whole idea of expanding our minds, expanding ourselves, and finding out what path we're meant to walk by being guided by our inner light. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Mika, please.
A great comments from both you guys. I don't know. I think what's crazy about Eric's writing is that how many references he pulls in and yet has cohesive pieces. That drives me nuts, because if I was to try to pull in biblical references, pop culture references, a circus ringmaster, it would come out, you know, like a mutant thing, my poem. Like, the way he does it, it's cohesive. And that's really, really cool to read. And it, as Pam was saying, you can't read it without smiling when these things kind of wash over you. I think my favorite part was between Doris Day, Que Sera Sera, and Robin's Batman Joker, which is, I love how I put that, find your shoe. So in all these pieces, you know, we've been talking about the pull between nihilism and understanding the lack of inherent meaning in the universe, but finding your own, because you could go either way with existentialism. And here he says, it doesn't matter, between those two extremes, find your shoe, the one that will most accommodate your heart space expansion. And that was really, I don't know, almost liberating to read. One person who's not talking about the pain of the tug of war, but instead says, find your own shoe. And I like at the end, and I like at the end where he talks about AI and the difference between them and us, even if their cerebral cognitive functions are superior and will usurp ours, we have the God spark, and they will never be able to come to an understanding that there is no ringmaster, because we are their creators. We are their ringmaster. So it was cool in the end to pull in that that comparison. I loved it.
Great comment. You are very erudite. Hey, Pam, we're at a fork in the road. Which one do we take?
All right. Up next, we have One Moment on the Edge of Forever by Intimidus Rex. And go ahead, Lawrence, and give that a read.
With great pleasure. It's called, you just said it, One Moment on the Edge of Forever. Did you burn that bridge too far, hanging from a gallows pole? Have you trod upon vested spars beyond the veil of the winter's cold? Can you sense the sound of nothing screaming in your ears? And have you found that vein which pulses, driving all your fears? Come, dance beneath the stars this night, playing badminton with the moon, but skip and jump in blind eyesight, us divining this melancholy lagoon. Tell me the tales of brave Ulysses and the white rabbits who stole the fleece, of gilded samovars and emerald seas where rivulets dapple the shores of Greece. Sing to me in Ewen notes as Serenguendoff rise, draped in amethystine waves, he cloaks soft tissues, winklings, and breaks eyes, while the fullness of her gape he spoke. I've met my night where incoherent dust am I, the Joyce who jimmied thundered treasure from that bum. Now must I, the looted marrow, from bone to lie in yards of wasted gravel, which all dusk. Wonderland's gone, Alice in chains, this rooster crows no more, grinners all, this bowl hangs empty, side by side, one by one, hats and hats, must mutter, Buster, beneath a double espresso, caramel, brandy, to die, to sleep, I chance to dream, know not thy fear as desire's breast, beats slow the harmonic thrum, for in this night the rest and the flesh comes undone. This ode to gallows, one's wooed wife, which binds one firm, in hemp necked strife. Kiss me wild, do not fail, for the rabble demands a good show at Reading Jail. And with that shuddering bang, freefall floats in the rush of eared whispers as that raven calls its blue-black wing across Owl Creek's bridge too far. And
that was a great
lead. What a
fun. Yeah.
All right, Nika, you nominated yourself, I think.
I'd love to comment first. First of all, I saw myself in there, Rex. Second of all, I really like this. And the way that he spoke to the prompt, I think, and of course I'm not going to be super confident in my interpretations because it's Rex and there's probably meanings behind meanings in every line. But I think that he's talking about the death of the ego. And in your poem, Laurent, you talked about it on the edge of a bayonet, I think that was your poem.
Yeah.
This one, you go too far, you split on that bayonet and realize that yourself or your own conception of yourself is like almost a pile of nothing that you're wrapping your hands around to give it form. And when you let go, it splinters into a million pieces. And that feeling of kind of a free fall has been in other poems, but in this one, it has such a fun fall. I don't know, like the Alice in Chains, No Wonderland Left, like it's just the fall down the rabbit hole, the whole poem. And I love that. And especially, I think, when he says, to die this sleep, my chance to dream, to die to the self that you thought you were, that others told you you were, or that you had built out of, again, preconceptions, to die to that self is your chance to dream, is your chance to reinvent and recreate. And I don't know, it's fun when speaking to an existentialist prompt, which, again, can bring such darkness, instead brings such a playful, like low-key, the trickster god kind of feeling to that freedom that comes from meaninglessness and just going a bridge too far in your understanding.
Oh, I love your comment. That was fine. Pam, could you take a turn at this, please?
Absolutely. Great observations there, Mika. This is stunning. And of course, completely Rex style in its use of creative and brilliant imagery, metaphors, and language that harkens back to a different time period. I really like the opening lines. And did you burn that bridge too far, hanging from a gallows pole? Have you trod upon vesper spars beyond the veil of winter's cold? It's like, have you closed yourself up to options that might be readily available to you? I really like how this speaks on the idea of having fun with the mind, having fun with nature. You know, as Nika was saying, falling down that rabbit hole just for the sake of the fall itself. I really like, tell me tales of brave Ulysses and the white rabbit who stole the fleece of gilded samovars and emerald seas where rivulets dabble the shores of Greece. This is, you know, all about that idea of exploring the mind, exploring the possibilities of what's out there, and being willing to cross over boundaries in order to experience true philosophical jubilation. So wonderful write by Rex, and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you. You know, I have to read, if you guys don't mind, Victoria Forever's comment on this piece, because she echoes a little bit of what I thought. To say that I enjoyed one moment on the edge of forever would be ludicrous. I sat glued to each word and hung ten as I free fell into enormous possibilities. To say that this creation is clever is medieval. whilst I sit lock-jawed in awe. I hated how marvelous this is, that I may not enter. Deborah, well, I'm glad she did. I'll tell you, one moment on the edge of forever is laid down in language that is timeless, literally. Words that stretch across centuries, matters of speech that stretch across centuries that are still alive and are so evocative. Phrasing that pleases the ear and the intellect with understanding reflected in the choice of prompt and superb response. I thought this was a glorious work, especially that did you burn that bridge too far, hanging from a gallows pole stanza, which I thought was excellent. Pam, I left you a little note in the room.
Yes, but we can continue now. All right. Sounds good. Up next, we have The Walls We Fill by If You Are Abs. And Mika, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. The Walls We Fill by If You're Abs. My wife sleeps on her back, hand caressing her chin as if deep in thought. Plants sit on an ironing board near the front windows. Benoit on a chair with no dance partner. A small table fan churns white noise from the floor. Air brushes the room's dust bunnies. Black coffee warms the brain cells and coaxes some semblance of contemplation lying dormant in the folds. As I microwave coffee in the navy blue Vanguard cup, my eyes note the crock pot and ranch seasoning jar counter squatting, awaiting carrots, onions, potatoes, and beef. My mind stirs a second over how chuck roast was named. I'm sure Siri or Alexa can fill me in. Hot again, I sip as my phone charges. His yellowness enters the room, slipping in like a snide remark. Morning light is gray, crepuscular. The weather guy called for overcast yesterday. Does that mean overfished? He pointed to two disco balls hurtling towards Bermuda and Jacksonville, been to spaces in both places. Hurricanes are twisted sisters scouring a medicine cabinet. There's a light over the oven and a light from an iPad that swipes photos of JoJo's daughter and grandkids, replacing family albums and wall hangings. It's a small condo, but the basement where I nod because of the soft mattress topper is big. There's room for a second refrigerator, a stand-up freezer, washer-dryer, and storage shelves, furniture. I like it here. If walls talk like whispering ghosts, will they one day speak my name? I helped paint some of them, and the bathroom's next, but I sense the kitchen knows me best. I hoof back up to her now, press the plus 30 seconds button twice, and wait for the beep. I do a few incline push-ups, and I hope the kitchen will remember me. End poem.
Oh, that was a great read. You read that exactly the way I hoped that you would. That was fine. Morning light is gray, crepuscular. The weather guy called for overcast yesterday. Does that mean overfished? Overcast, overfished. If's wit is his hallmark. There's a gentle wisdom that flows from his pen, kind of a homespun admission of the hope to leave evidence of yourself imbued in the inanimate surrounding him, thereby bringing it to life, avoiding the desolation that I would be even more alone in death than in life. And bring it to life, he does. If walls talk like whispering ghosts, will they one day speak my name? I help paint some of them in the bathrooms next. The sense of the kitchen knows me the best. Now, I could quote further, but it's a lot simpler to read and reread this work, feasting on its almost casual richness. It's just an outstanding. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this truly is an outstanding piece. If is another one of those that has a style all his own, which really makes me smile, and I really appreciate how he combines humor and philosophy. And I said in my written comments, if walls could talk, we'd either be famous or truly brilliant imagery and metaphors, clever lines. And I really like how he does speak on that idea of going through everyday life and then pondering, you know, what's it going to all mean in the end? Who or what are we going to remember? Who's going to you know, who are we going to make an impact on? And I really like Morning Light is Gray, Crepuscular. The weather guy called for overcast yesterday. Does that mean overfished? You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, ma'am. Nico, how about you, dear?
Those are both really good comments.
We started with you.
You let me read, but I didn't get a comment.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, getting confused. Please go ahead and comment.
Okay, well, I mean, I do have a lot to add to your guys' comments because they're both excellent, but I do want to say that if, like Pam says, has a very specific style, and I think that the hallmark of it is that he makes the everyday exceptional. And
yes,
that is a really cool thing in poems, but also when compared with an existentialist prompt, with an existentialist theme, it becomes even more meaningful, because if no meaning is inherent and only the meaning that we apply to the external is real, and it's only real in that we make it so, making the everyday exceptional, it has the same weight as whatever else you would assign meaning to. And so I think that that's my comment. Just, it's really cool to see his style paired with this philosophy because it fits so well and it takes on weight of meaning that I think escapes a lot of us, except for the poets. And we embrace existential philosophy when we pull the strands of meaning from things that seem so ordinary and not mediocre. That's not the right word I'm thinking of, but things that just don't seem heavy with the weight that we assign them. Thanks.
That was a great call. Really. Thank you. Pam, we're down to what, 9 minutes, maybe something like that, 8 minutes? So use your judgment.
Absolutely. Well, I've put up a nice short one that I think is very enjoyable. I found it so anyways. And this is Existence, My Work of Art by Emily Dickinson. And it goes like this. Can't agree with such thorough rap, existentially wrapped. My grandmama was night she. Just listened. I know some find that appalling. I follow in her steps, and I'm Buddha Lot. End poem.
that is nice, isn't it? To see that kind of wordplay. Yeah, it's a visual work of art almost. The text shaping the thought internally and externally. Clever and insightful wordplay. Absolutely. Mika?
Okay, well, I agree with you. And also, I think it's funny that I hadn't read this poet before, but when I saw their name as Pam posted, I thought, that's a funny play on words. And then the names in play on words continued through the whole poem. It was very cohesive that way, cracking up.
It was. Thank you. And Pam?
Yeah, I thought this was wonderful. Great wordplay. I feel like he changed the shaping up a little bit. Either I saw it differently before, but when I first saw this, I thought it looked to be in the shape of like one of those cones that you find on roadways, like when the road's under construction or the highway's under construction and you have to take a detour. And so I thought that was a kind of a symbolism in the shape and the whole idea of philosophy being about taking those detours in life. And this is one of those poems that I have to highly recommend to people, that if you're just listening to the show and you have the opportunity to look at this poem, you have to look, because the wordplay is just, it's clever and it's fun and it's a great sense of humor. So, very well done.
Yeah, that's sorrow for sorrow. A falling for a falling. It was great all the way through. All right, let us move on.
All right. Let's see here. I think this one. Here we go, if I remember right. Hopefully I'm grabbing one I'm thinking of. Jewel of Time by Alan Brumaire. And go ahead, Lauren, and give that a read for us, please.
Oh, this is a Gene poem. There's birth and death moment.
Okay.
No, that's fine. There's birth and death in every moment. No meaning unless you make a necklace of those beads. End poem. Well, Mika, give it a shot.
I like that we're ending on this one because it's like kind of a perfect summation of the themes of the poems that we've read so far. Because, I mean, I think the concept or the theme of the show that you picked, Laurent, was really well responded to. And this is exactly the meaning distilled into three short lines. No meaning unless you make. Excellent.
I absolutely agree. Em?
Oh, this is great, and I have to agree with Mika. It's a wonderful poem to end the night on because it wraps up things nicely. I do have to say, great show tonight. I really appreciate everybody who was wrote for it. I mean, amazing lineup of poetry, including this one. And I like how this speaks on the idea that it's up to us to create meaning in life. So an excellent three-liner and very well done.
Mm. Yeah, I really like the thought of every moment, of every moment giving birth and every moment giving death. And it can be momentous. And there's so much tied up in those moments, some of which may have no meaning because they flip by so quickly when you learn to string them all together in a necklace, so to speak, that you wear. It's a brevity that uses a metaphor which remains clean and clear, allowing us our own meanings with which to live life as we see fit. Excellent. We're down to a couple of minutes. I just wanted to say what a pleasure it is to work with two poets like Pam and Mika, who are able to express themselves as well as anyone that we deal with. And we've got some excellent people who contribute to this show and others all throughout the week. These two young ladies, if I may be so bold, really are quite very pleasurable to work with in terms of what they bring to the show, which is an awful lot. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate you guys and Gene, who actively supports so many shows all week long and does so much work behind the scenes that no one ever sees to keep the whole thing cohesive and continuing. Anything to say, Pam or Mika, before we wind up this of our first shows?
Great show, thank you, and I had so much fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here, Mika. And I'm looking forward to future episodes.
That's right. We have to find something as good as existentialism to think about. We'll have to think of that. Good night, everyone.
Quite
good night. Thank you all
challenge
for listening. Yeah, that's true. All right. Good night, all.
Good night.